think it's time to blow this scene. Get everybody in the stuff together. Okay, 3, 2, 1, let's jam.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the very first ever Shortwave Weekly Podcast. I am your host, Chris Freitas. If you know me, I also host a radio program on the college radio station here at the University of Memphis. Radio program, station WMR, U92 FM. I am on the air Wednesdays from noon to 3 Central Time, and we broadcast on 91.7 FM here in Memphis or online at wmr.memphis.edu. Anyway, that's my little shameless self-promotion for now. Today we have some topics for our very first podcast. We actually have some questions from people who are interested in the shortwave hobby, and we also have some news about Radio Prague, and I think current listeners and maybe future listeners might be pretty interested in. So sit back, enjoy, listen to this podcast, whether you're on a computer or simply listen to your iPod or on the internet, streaming elsewhere. So keep it tuned here to Shortwave Weekly. All right, we're going to go to these questions. These actually come from one of my friends here at the University of Memphis. Her name is Terry Jones. She is a communications major, or was. She's a graduate. Either she's a graduate student or a graduate of the University of Memphis. But she had asked me some questions, actually, via Facebook. I started up a Facebook group, and if you're a member of Facebook, you can check us out. That address, I don't have the exact address, but you could just type in Shortwave Weekly in the search bar, and you should be able to find a group right there. Or you can visit, or just type in Shortwave, and it'll be listed. But I digress. Here's some of the questions that she has asked me. Where would you recommend a complete radio newbie to start? And newbie, she is referring to someone who has no experience or has any idea what shortwave radio is. Other questions she asks, how did you get started, and is it an expensive hobby? Well, I'm going to just go off and say how I got started in shortwave. I was 12 years old. This was probably back in 1996. I first started listening to shortwave after reading an article about it in a Boys Life magazine. I was in the Scouts, so I would regularly get these subscriptions. And throughout the magazine, I would read it, and there's like a hobby section, and it talked about listening to the world on shortwave. And I thought, well, that's pretty cool. Lo and behold, I didn't even have any idea that I had a shortwave radio in my possession until I noticed on an old World Band radio I got from a friend that it had shortwave as a listing, and it said SW. I didn't know the acronym at the time, but I just put two to two together, and I'm like, wait, maybe that's shortwave. And before I even started tuning in, I did some research on the internet, whatever research I could do. It was late 90s, so internet was very slow at the time. Went to the public library, did some research on Yahoo, and looked at several websites and looked at frequencies. And when I actually found the frequencies, I tuned in, and lo and behold, I was able to get some stations. At the time, the BBC World Service was broadcasting to North America still at that particular time, Radio Canada and Radio Havana, and various amounts of religious broadcasters that are still on the air. So I got my start from listening to these stations by just reading a Boys Life magazine, and that's how my hobby started becoming I started getting more and more interested in finding out more information about it, and started learning about QSL cards and those sort of things. QSL cards, if those who don't know, when you write into a station, you can confirm their reception that you heard the program by giving various information such as station name, program, show, the signal strength, if there's any fear interference, overall performance, however you rate it, and these help the stations figure out how well the signal's being heard. And if all your information is correct, they'll send you a QSL card, given that you provide maybe a stamp to help return the postage. And so after a few weeks or maybe a month, sometimes it takes a little bit longer depending on the station, you'll get a nice little collector postcard that features something about a country, whether it's a landmark or flag or a famous person, whatever it may be. It'll be on the front. Then on the back, it has the information that you provided to that station, with the station saying, "We confirm your reception of Radio XYZ. Thank you for tuning in, and thank you for your comments and suggestions or whatnot." But that's one of the perks of being a shortwave listener. Now, for the question, what would you recommend to start? I would, like what I did, now the internet's faster, I would suggest looking online, use Google. Google's an excellent source, well, not source, but excellent search engine where you can find multiple sources on this topic. Just type in shortwave and you'll get a lot of websites. I also would recommend looking at radio station websites like the BBC World Service, Radio Canada International, China Radio International, WHBQ, just various websites. I would also recommend going to one website where you can get a comprehensive listing of different shortwave stations, and that is Primetime Shortwave. It's a cheap way to where you can find a listing. It's a very cheap way because it's free. You can get this information based on region, and the website is primetimeshortwave.com. You can put in the www in front of it, and you go there, click your region. In this case, here, the Americas, you click on it, and it'll give you a listing of times in UTC, which is Universal Coordinated Time. We'll touch on Universal Coordinated Time at a later date, but you can find out more information on how to convert Universal Coordinated Time with your local time. One station to help you out on shortwave is either 5, 10, or 15 megahertz, and it'll give you the exact time in UTC. But Primetime Shortwave has a listing of shortwave stations that are on at the particular time. You can tune in using those frequencies that they have listed. Granted, it's not completely accurate, but it's about 90% accurate, I would say. It is information submitted by shortwave stations and people who gather this information to submit it to, I believe his name is Dan Sampson, who provides the information. Who relays it on the internet, and so for people who are looking to tune in to these stations. Also, I would recommend picking this book up. It's called Passport to World Band Radio. I will wait for the latest edition to come out because the one I have right now, the 2009 25th edition, is about to become obsolete here in a few months because 2009 is about three-fourths over with. And this book is about somewhere between $20 to $25. You can pick it up at major bookstores like Bookstar, Barnes & Noble. You could get it on Amazon.com. I would recommend picking this up because it has a complete listing of but it has a lot of shortwave stations that are associated by region, has receiver reviews, program guide. It's very helpful for the beginning listener, and it's pretty much accurate. I find it pretty accurate, even though this is written in a year in advance. It's about as accurate as you're going to get. So I would recommend picking this up. It's more than, I would say, getting Primetime Shortwave frequency list. They're more updated, but this is very helpful. It'll help you in the long run. You find out what's going on the air at that particular time, and it's very helpful for the beginner shortwave. And the last question, is it expensive? That depends on what radio you get. I have the Sony ICF SW7600GR, and along with a Edison E5. I use now. I'm using the Sony more often than the Eaton receiver, but it depends on what you get. These are digital radios. When I mean digital, I am meaning it has a digital display, not digital as into the quality of reception, not like HD radio is here in the U.S. They are working on DRM, which is the digital component for shortwave, but as of right now, it's in an experimental phase. But these are digital receivers typically are about 50, anywhere between about 50 to well over $50, maybe 100, 150, so on. Gets more expensive depending on the better receivers. More oftentimes, your better receivers are tending to be better, higher priced. But are they worth the price? Yes. If you're just wanting to listen to major international shortwave stations, and that's the only thing you want to listen to, go for something about $100 or less. I would recommend getting look at Radio Shack. Get a digital receiver if it's cheap, somewhere between $50. But if you're just looking for something just to hear international broadcasters, radios are even cheaper than that. They could be as low as $15. They even sell them at Walgreens. Colby receivers, they're not the best by far, but they'll get the job done if you just want to listen to international broadcasters, and that's the only thing you want to listen to. Now, also keep in mind, they may not pick up weak signals very well. They may be harder to tune in because a lot of the cheaper ones are analog tuners, and you have to find the exact position on the dial to tune in, and many of them at that price range may not have complete coverage of the shortwave band, which is 2 to 30 megahertz or 2,000 to 30,000 kilohertz, depending on what method you use. But if you want to spend a little bit more, if you want to spend a little bit more and you want to hear more than just international broadcasters, you want to hear more distant signals or maybe even sideband frequencies, I would recommend spending something a little bit more than $100. That's where the Sony ICF comes into play. This retails online for about $150. The Edin E5 is about roughly that price. You could probably find it cheaper, maybe somewhere. I bought it for $80 at Circuit City before they closed. So I've tested both of them out, and they work pretty well. But if you feel like you need more information on this, I'll probably post some more information on the Facebook page and on the blog. And the blog site is shortwaveweekly.blogspot.com. And it also has a link to our RSS feed. And if you have not found it, which I don't see how you can hear this podcast if you have not found it, but the page for that. The page for the RSS feed is feeds.feedburner.com/shortwaveweekly. And if you have iTunes or a podcast directory of some sort that will stream your podcast over, just search under Shortwave Weekly, and I'm certain it will be there. If not, you can just send me a message either on Facebook through the group or through my personal page, or you can email me at Chris Freitas, that's Freitas, 2003 at yahoo.com. Here's some more of the news. Jonathan Murphy, who had brought this attention to me, this shortwave listener, I'm assuming, he had messaged me through the Shortwave Weekly group, and he asked a question, wanted me to share some information about Radio Prague, some news that just came to my attention. So I looked at this news, and this is from the Save Radio Prague group, And I'm going to just go ahead and read what the news says here. Dear fellow shortwave listeners, I've been in Prague this past week and met David Vaughn, the former head of the English section. It has been just announced that the Czech Ministry of Foreign Affairs is looking for Radio Prague to end all shortwave transmissions from the Czech Republic at the end of 2009. This will be an irreversible step. Radio Prague is the only customer, Litmysil, I'm hoping I pronounce that right, Litomysl. Radio Prague is the only customer at Litmysil, and this would result in the closing and dismantling of that transmitter site. David has written a letter in which he would like to be widely circulated as possible, and this is dated October 12, 2009. Dear friends of Radio Prague, you are probably not yet aware of the future of Radio Prague. The international service of Czech Radio is under serious threat. The station began shortwave broadcasts in 1936, and with the exception period of the wartime German occupation, has been broadcasting to the world ever since. Like most international public service broadcasters, Radio Prague is state-financed. It is paid for through the state budget via the Czech Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Radio Prague is facing a 20% cut in its budget for 2010. At first glance, this feature does not seem to be a mortal blow, but its impact will be devastating. The Foreign Ministry has stated explicitly that it considers shortwave to be an anachronistic means of broadcasting and has called on Radio Prague to terminate its shortwave broadcast entirely from January 2010. As a result of the transmitter, east of Prague, will almost certainly be dismantled. Radio Prague will continue primarily as a website. The saving of the state budget will be tiny. In order to save about €500,000, Radio Prague will end as a shortwave broadcaster after more than 70 years. In the course of my time as a BBC correspondent and then as editor-in-chief at Radio Prague until 2006, when I was also active in the European Broadcasting Union, I followed developments in international broadcasting closely. During that period, a number of international broadcasters abandoned their roots in radio, nearly always at the bidding of bureaucrats rather than those involved in the stations themselves. Almost without exception, the outcome, sooner or later, was the demise of the station altogether. There are several reasons for this. One helpful parallel is to compare the position of that of a newspaper with a long and rich tradition, which stops appearing in paper form and maintains only a web presence. Although worldwide trend towards digitalization is clear, this does not mean that it's wise to throw out overnight all the advantages of producing a traditional newspaper. In the case of radio, the risks are still more evident because public service broadcasting is a very specific medium with a distinct tradition and audience at its core is the spoken word. In the 7 decades of its existence, Radio Prague has built up a huge base of know-how and impressive reputation internationally. Its role in the events in 1968 when Radio Prague journalists defied the Soviet-led invasion of Czechoslovakia is legendary. Radio Prague has built on this tradition in the 2 decades since the fall of communism, transforming itself into a thriving modern broadcaster. There can be little doubt that it's a far larger audience than any other Czech radio station, but unfortunately these listeners are scattered around the world and do not form a strong domestic lobby. Shortwave broadcasts are in decline, but they have been seen as part of the broader mosaic. Today's international broadcasters have long been aware of the need of to broadcast on a number of different platforms, shortwave, medium wave, FM, satellite, internet, and others. The more forward-looking among them have learned to be flexible and innovatory. In this respect, the modern transformation of Radio Prague began over 15 years ago when it was one of the first international broadcasters to set up its own website. That was back in 1994. This was quickly followed by a daily email news service and other innovations, including the enthusiastic commitment to satellite broadcasting. At the same time, it also has modernized the way the radio is produced. Its journalists today take it for granted that they're working for a multimedia environment where the spoken word is reinforced by text and image. And Radio Prague has learned to be extremely cost-effective, broadcasting around the world in 6 languages for the equivalent of less than 3 million euro a year. In order for this to continue, it is absolutely critical for Radio Prague not to forget its core activity. The station's current success is built on its status and tradition as a radio broadcaster. If it forgets its identity as radio, it will inevitably lose its way, desperately trying to compete in a field that is not its own. The news of its latest cuts puts the staff and management of Radio Prague in a difficult position. It will not be easy for them to launch a campaign to save shortwave broadcasts, as they could find themselves facing the alternative of having to cut jobs instead. Given that amount of money needed to save the shortwave broadcasts is so small, I am convinced that the cause is worth fighting for and that it does not have to be the case of pitching jobs against shortwave. If the decision makers in the government and at the ministry can be made to understand what is at stake, I am sure the money can be found. That is why I'm writing this letter, to encourage listeners around the world to rally behind Radio Prague at this difficult time. With warmest regards, David Vaughn. Radio Prague needs to get listeners' support at this time. Their address is Radio Prague, VINOHRADSKA with an accent on the top, 12, then that's the second line, third line, 12099 Prague 2, Czech Republic. And the telephone number is +420 221 552 933, or you can fax at +420 221 552 903, or email cr@radio.cz. That's cr@radio.cz, Z being in zebra. Listeners should also contact the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of the Czech Republic, and I cannot pronounce that name, but you can email at podatelna@mzv.cz. Don't forget to make your voice heard by contacting the Czech embassies and representatives in your country. This is how we can show how much Radio Prague means to listeners around the world. And a list of Czech embassies' mailing and email addresses can be found at https://mcv.cz/jmp/or excuse me backslash is here backslash en backslash dipolomatic underscore misis ion underscore misis ion underscore mises underscore misis ion underscore abroad backslash index.html. And that's http://www.mzv.cz/jmp/en/diplomatic_missions/czech_missions_abroad/index.html. We have a chance to make a difference by making our voice heard. Please take the time to do so, even if it has only 2 lines via email to say when you listen to Radio Prague. Let's keep Radio Prague on the air. This is by Jonathan Murphy from Ireland. Well, I think we are just about out of time. I actually went well over than what I was going to for this podcast. I was actually going to try to keep this about 15 minutes, but it seems like we went over that, which is fine because it's the internet. There's a lot of space. And next week, well, I don't know what I got planned for next week, but I'll try to find something new, and I'll try to keep it a little bit more prepared for upcoming episodes as I keep learning how to do the podcasting thing. But if you haven't catched the email, not email, but the website address, you can find us on Blogger at www.shortwaveweekly.blogspot.com, and the RSS feed, http feedburner.com/shortwaveweekly. And you can catch us on Facebook. Just type in Shortwave Weekly in the search bar, and you could become a member. And for future news, we'll have some news on there, along in the blog, and here on this podcast. And I really am glad to be doing this as part of a service. This is actually something I'm supposed to do for a radio project for one of my communications classes, but I think even when I'm through with the class, I would like to continue on with this, and I'll try to keep this updated every week. So I hope you tune in next time here on Shortwave Weekly, and I will join you all next week. 73.